G'day, Paul Buckley here. Welcome to Australia Talks on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia, on your MP3 player and via the web, from which you may be streaming us live. Many of you have teenage kids and you'll know all about how much they can cost you. Mobile phone bills in particular can be a killer. Then there's the right clothes, trips to the movies, the list goes on and on. So it makes sense they should at least partly help fund their own lifestyle. Or does it? More and more Australian school students these days work part-time. But is it interfering with their all-important school studies? Some think it can, and there are restrictions. Did you know around 260,000 Australian school students are officially on the payroll, but many others work informally, chipping in for cash in hand or working in the family business? And there can be benefits beyond the money too. Learning about personal responsibility, becoming more independent, also interacting with other adults. So is it a good thing that more school-age children are working? Or should they put it off until they're a bit older? Have you found it can interfere with their education, maybe prevent them from undertaking other activities as well, like sport? Or are there important values and life lessons that teenagers can learn on the job? Have you or your teenage children had good or bad experiences in the workforce? I'd love to hear your stories. Join in the discussion today, either online at abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks or on the phone 1300 22 55 76. That number again, 1300 22 55 76. Call us right now from the Northern Territory and South Australia. Love to hear from you, particularly if you're working yourself. As we talk about teenagers in the workforce, let me introduce you, first of all today, to your guests. Dr. Lucas Walsh is Director of Research with the Foundation for Young Australians, and Toby Fattori is Senior Research Analyst at the University of Sydney's Workplace Research Centre. Lucas, I'll come to you first of all. Welcome to Australia Talks.
G'day, Paul.
A recent report by the Federal Parliament's Standing Committee on Education and Training put the official number of working school students at 260,000, as I just mentioned. Do we have an idea, though, of what the actual numbers are?
No, Paul, we don't. I mean, we have some speculation about what numbers of young people are involved in work that's not recorded. We know that that number is significantly high, but we don't have a lot of hard data on that.
So what ages are we talking about when we talk about teenagers who work?
We're predominantly talking about the age group of 15 to 19, although that age group can be, can be up a year or up and above below that amount.
Mm. So how many 15, 16-year-olds would work roughly? Have you got a figure on that?
Well, roughly around 7.4% of teenagers work part-time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, bearing in mind that there's about 1.5 million young people aged between 15 to 19.
7.4%, that sounds like a lower number, in fact, than I would have expected.
Well, I mean, what we see is in full-time education, we see just under 70% activities undertaken by teenagers. There's around about 14 in full-time work.
Yeah,
and
okay.
And then others seeking work. So,
And what would you say is the reason behind this growing number of working students? Why are they working?
Well, I mean, there's two things to say about that. One is, although in the longer term we are seeing increasing numbers of young people working, we do also have to acknowledge the fact that this is a particularly vulnerable group, and that number was quite severely hit, for example, by the economic downturn last year, which saw the number of unemployed rates for young people skyrocket. But in aggregate, we see more young people working because, in part, of the nature of longer-term economic growth, and we can also attribute it to greater needs and costs associated with living and schooling.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say that. I mean, teenage lives are becoming more expensive, aren't they? Especially if, as many teenagers do, if they want the latest technology, the latest iPod, the mobile phone, and so on.
Yes, there certainly are competing material demands placed upon young people.
Toby Fattori, if I can bring you into the discussion, what kind of part-time jobs do school students generally take on? Is there a range?
Yes, hi Paul, how are you going? There is a range. And I think what's important to realise that young people are involved in a really broad range of and diverse types of work. When we look at the formal economy, there's a concentration in the sorts of jobs that you might expect in food, preparation, retail, sales. But we, in research that has been undertaken by the Commission for Children and Young People, it's also included the informal economy. We see that there's even a really diverse range of work. Things like ongoing care work, which is sometimes paid or unpaid, through to things like high-level clerical work, IT work, young people maintaining websites for businesses. Mm. And these sorts of jobs are often not counted in formal statistical collections.
Yeah, look, I was thinking about the classic cheap babysitter around the corner, also the teenage boy that mows your lawn a lot cheaper than the commercial franchise. But that's interesting, IT work, because, I mean, everybody's got a story to tell about the 16-year-old who knows the inside of their computer backwards. So it probably shouldn't surprise us that companies can employ them rather cheaply and get good value out of them.
Well, in terms of the increase in the number of young people who are participating in work, Lucas described some of the issues around economic growth, but we've also seen a sectoral change in the sorts of work which is dominant in the Australian economy. So the service sector has replaced a lot of manufacturing jobs, and those sorts of jobs are also, they create opportunities for young people because they're often part-time, require flexible working hours. So those sorts of opportunities have actually increased, and that also might be driving the growth of young people in the formal economy.
Mm.
In terms of the informal economy, that's certainly the case. But you also have a lot of young people involved in agricultural work on family farms, and that can happen. They can be involved from a very early age in that sort of work.
I had a mental picture of many of these teenage kids working in the multinational food chains and supermarket chains and so on. Would they form the bulk of the young employees, or do many of them work in small business and, as you've mentioned, in family businesses as well, like farms and so on?
For younger children who often have their first work experience, not necessarily labour market experience, in family-based businesses, they often pick up work, sometimes on a short basis for a couple of days, one-off, through those sorts of known networks, through family friends, through friends' parents. Mm. So there's a significant number of young people who are getting both sorts of jobs in both sorts of small-scale and often informal businesses. As they get older, we find that young people are entering the formal labour market, and that's where they're picking up those sorts of work in the service economy, in those large multinationals, as you call them.
Mm. You're tuned to Australia Talks. We're actually talking today about teenagers in the workforce, school students doing part-time work, the pros and cons. Love to hear from you if you're a parent. Maybe you think it's a good thing that your kids are doing a bit of work and earning a bit of money, maybe contributing to their expenses. Maybe there are other benefits other than the money. Maybe you're seeing them develop more confidence, higher self-esteem, or perhaps you're concerned that they're not spending enough time on their schoolwork, that they're enjoying the money too much and aren't focused on their schoolwork. Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. If you're a teenager and you're listening and you work part-time, I'd love to hear what you're getting out of it, other than the money, obviously, and whether or not you think you can balance that with your schoolwork and all the other things that are going on in your life. There is a spare line. Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. We'll take some of your calls shortly. Toby, how common is it that school students have to work out of necessity because that money is required to support their families?
There are a number of young people who are required to do that, but not as many as we might think. Generally, often it's middle-class young people and fairly wealthy young people who often have the access to both sorts of informal work opportunities and also some participation in the formal labour market. So what we found is that young people who are more advantaged are often the ones who are working. So and this is because they have known networks, they... work is seen as something which is beneficial to them, whereas often there may be a concern amongst parents who are not as well off that their children succeed educationally and therefore focus entirely on their education without necessarily seeing the benefits that working life might come. So there would be some young people who are working to supplement family income. The other thing that we should note here is that even though it's young people, few young people are working for that basic income issue, often through their work, because they supplement family income, it means that their income available to parents and to households can then be diverted onto other issues. So overall, it can take the pressure off households. And I think that's a far more common scenario than, say, young people whose direct income is used to support family income.
I'm going to head around the country now with your thoughts on 1300 22 55 76, talking with Toby Vettori from the University of Sydney's Workplace Research Centre and Lucas Walsh from the Foundation for Young Australians. We'll hear more from both of them in just a moment. But now it's time to hear from you. Let's go to Warren in Tweed Heads, who's a teacher, so I suppose he gets to see these kids who are working at school. Hi, Warren.
Yes, I do. Now, I'll preface my remarks. First of all, work experience element. It's well known in the schools, work experience, kids go out and do it. My son, he worked on the school holidays at a go-kart place, and my daughter worked at, I won't mention the supermarket's name, I understand the difficulties there, and a neighbour's up the road, 16-year-old daughter, currently works at another supermarket. Now, the school I was teaching at last year, there was a collapse of a multi-million dollar boat building industry. Parents dropped from six figures wages to zero, and a massive number of kids were working. I do surveys in the classroom, and some of them were working till 10 o'clock five nights a week.
Yeah.
And I noticed one of the girls, year 10, 16, 15-year-old, she'd gone to sleep in the back of the classroom, so I quietly snuck up. I said, are you all right? And I said, do you work at night? She said, yes. How many nights a week? Five. What time do you finish? 10 o'clock. Then this is a good one. I approached the principal on this, and he said, oh, well, he said, these families are struggling, and these kids are going to go to work. Now, I held my tongue.
It is a dilemma, though, isn't it? It is a dilemma, though, isn't it? I mean, on the one hand, you're a teacher wanting to get the best out of your students. Yep. On the other hand, these families have gone from, as you've suggested, being financially comfortable to all of a sudden needing every bob they can.
Well, some families just want their kids to go to school and work, and a lot of kids want to go to school so they work so they can buy themselves a car and get ready for university. So it's not always an economic dilemma, but I did hold my tongue. But thinking only sort of reaction was that, look, if they can't work at school, then either they don't come to school or they cut back on their work program.
Yeah, and also not to mention the fact that it's going to impede their future. Warren, it's a good opening call. Thanks. I'm going to leave it there and continue around the country. Jack in Armidale's next. Hello, Jack.
Hi, how are you?
Now, what do you think about kids working, Jack?
Well, I had 30 years' experience in various schools, and to me, I think it's a really great thing because it forces the kids to get organised. It raises their self-esteem, and they get much better performance out of themselves in academic work. But then I'm sympathetic because I started work when I was in the last 2 years of high school. And it didn't hurt me, and I've got enough degrees for the whole family.
Thanks, Jack. Let's go to Julie in Grafton now. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I've got two daughters, both leaving their teens now, and both about to start university. One of them worked part-time and the other one didn't. And I've found now that the one who worked, she worked in her gap year, and she saved enough money to buy a car, move into a flat, do all of those things that she wanted to do. The older one, who didn't work, I think now doesn't actually have the confidence to get out there. It's very difficult for her now to be going into uni and trying to find a part-time job. I just found that the self-esteem thing, it's made a difference. The second one who worked, she's got amazing confidence. She's wonderful at what she does to the point that her boss actually is sorry to lose her.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation. There's that old saying too, that if you want something done, ask a busy person. And I wonder whether or not that's the same, that basically if you've got kids who are working and they've got their school commitments and maybe they've got their extracurricular activities, that from a young age it teaches them to be organised and efficient.
I mean, having said that, there are some kinds of jobs that I've seen friends of them do that really have probably not been as beneficial, as an earlier caller was saying, late nights and things like that. Mm. But I have found that the reality and the value of money does come across when they're earning it themselves. I always had a rule that I wasn't going to pay for mobile phones and credit on phones.
That is a very good rule too, Julie. I'll leave it there. It's been a good call. I want to go back to Lucas Walsh because Julie just mentioned that point there about money, but it's obviously about more than money, young people in the workforce, although they might not think so themselves. How important, for example, Lucas, is the fact that these younger people are interacting with other adults other than those in their family? And does this help them, with part of the process of growing up?
It's extremely important, Paul. And I mean, the experiences of Warren, Jack and Julie are echoed throughout the country. I mean, the research tells us that, a little bit of work experience while undertaking education, schooling is good. It introduces people to networks, to experiences, to a wider world of work. And that to some extent, this is really important. Too much, though, can inhibit learning outcomes, particularly during that critical year of transition in teens.
And do we see these part-time jobs as playing a direct role in the transition from school to work? I mean, clearly a lot of the jobs are not going to be the areas of work that these kids will eventually move into when they've completed school and perhaps completed their university studies as well.
That's correct. I mean, there's two ways of looking at this. For a lot of these young people, the types of jobs they're talking about, the types that Toby described in retail and service, they're not necessarily going to be the career paths for these young people. However, on the other hand, it's just good to have that experience, to get out there, to learn that sense of responsibility, to learn that self-confidence, the kind of thing that Julie was talking about.
So when you talk about transition, you're talking about that emotional transition that teenage children go through in the later high school years and how work can enhance them in that way.
That's right. You have to take a kind of a holistic view of young people too, that it's not just about a work transition or a school transition from school to university. It's about an emotional journey, it's about a work journey and so forth.
You're on Australia Talks talking about school-age children working, teenagers. Maybe you've got a teenage child who works. Maybe you're concerned about how many hours, or maybe you're a teenager yourself and want to ring up with your thoughts. 1300 22 55 76. There'll be some more calls soon. Walk into just about any restaurant or coffee shop, and it's very common these days to see high school students working the tables all around the country. One of them is Alana Bethune. She works in a coffee shop in Brisbane. And Australia Talks producer Karen Zivanovits visited her at work.
Hi, how are you? How can I help you?
May I please have a skinny caramel flat white?
Sure. Is that tab here or to take away?
From 10 in the morning until late afternoon every Saturday, high school student Ilana serves coffee in the Village Aroma Cafe in Toowong. She gets $11.50 per hour. That's quite a good salary for her age, and the money comes in handy.
I really wanted to get a job so that I could buy things that I wanted and save up for things that meant more for me. It's not necessarily that I need them, but I just love that I'm able to go out to the movies and to be able to do the things I want without being stressed. I just went on a one-month trip to India, which I saved over half for. So that was a big thing that I really, really wanted to do.
The 16-year-old has been working the coffee shop for 1.5 years now, taking orders, clearing the dishes, working the till. But how a perfect cappuccino looks like is not the only thing she's learned.
The main thing it teaches me is to be responsible and also learning more people skills than I suppose I would have otherwise. I know on various occasions I've had to look after like a baby if their mum's gone to the bathroom, or clean up mess off the floor, or help someone out who can't take their meals. I just think it's broadening me and something that I wouldn't usually do, but it's a good thing that I'm doing, I suppose. Here's the soy decaf mug.
Thank you.
Here we are. And here's the regular.
Thank you very much.
Alana and the second student work the weekend shifts, and manager Yuming Wang swears by his young staff.
This gives this cafe an image that we are energized, you know, that kind of feeling. Young students here is comparatively easy to manage, and they got flexibilities. I think it's one of the main advantages, because here we are not always busy. Full-time staff, you have to guarantee a certain amount of hours over a week. That gives them less flexibility than the young students.
Yuming Wang would like the students to work longer hours, but one day per week is enough for Alana.
I can manage my time well enough so that I can still see my friends and still do things as well as studying. And in exams, I sometimes may just ask for a half a shift on Saturday if I'm too stressed. I know that when I first started, most of my friends didn't have jobs, so it was hard to get into the routine of every Saturday going to work and cancelling things. But now that's not a problem. In the long run, I suppose it's more worthwhile to being paid, and then I can actually spend my days off and do something more worthwhile.
And so she keeps on working the busy Saturday line at the coffee shop counter.
That's $4.40 for that. Thank you very much. $15.60 change and number 12. I'll bring that out to you.
And that was student Alana Bethune at work in her coffee shop in Brisbane. We're talking about, and that was put together by Australia Talks producer Karen Zivanovits. We're talking about school students, teenagers who work part-time and the benefits of it, and perhaps also some of the pitfalls. Love to hear from you if your teenage children work, or if you're a school student yourself. 1300 22 55 76. What do you get out of it? And how do you make sure that you're not working too many hours? Let's go to Kingaroy and hear from John. Hi, John.
Yeah, hello. How are you?
Very well.
Yeah, I guess I'd like to say that I'm quite strongly in favour of teenage kids working. And I guess our personal, my wife and I, have our personal experiences that it can work really well. We've had two kids that have recently gone through high school in Queensland and been very successful. And they also managed working jobs during that period. And it is tough for the kids because they have to manage their social life, their schoolwork and the job. Mm. But it is certainly possible. And we're from a relatively well-off middle-class sort of family, and though we don't give our kids many of the extras, and they really, if they want to have mobile phones and have designer label clothes and those sorts of things, we they need to do that themselves.
And I
think the kids get those extras themselves, which is their motivation, but from my perspective, that they learn skills that they just can't learn elsewhere, which makes them better able to adjust to life as they're leaving high school. And it does teach them to think the value of money, because coming from a relatively well-off family, you really don't value the things that you have if you haven't worked for them and earned them yourself.
Yeah, I think it's a very good point. Thanks, John, in Kingaroy. Actually, had a call from a listener who didn't want to go on air, but pointed out one of the pitfalls of working too late. The young Australian tennis player, Bernard Tomic, you may recall, who was doing pretty well in the Australian Open, actually, up against one of the best players in the world, but lost because he was having to play the match until the early hours of the morning, and in fact complained about the fact that teenagers shouldn't have to work that late, even if they're tennis players, and that it was affecting his performance. There's a thought. Let's hear from Nicholas next in Sydney. Hello, Nicholas.
G'day.
As opposed to some of the other the people who call back, I'm actually quite opposed to people working. I didn't work as a teenager
Mm-hmm. However, I started working my first year of university. And coming from high school where you don't particularly have much money and then you suddenly have quite a lot of money, and since most of the jobs for young people are casual, you get more encouraged to work more and more. And usually, if you're not mature enough, you lose the sight of the bigger picture.
Mm.
So I worked through the first 3 or 4 years of my university studies, and there were points where, due to working excessive hours, I almost failed subjects. The points where I worked well when I studied particularly poorly. Students who start in high school, I think, are a significantly lower maturity level than I was at university. And I have seen people in these jobs that I worked with, they started working when they were 14, 15. Mm. They leave school at end of year 10. They occasionally started a TAFE course or some tertiary education, but then quickly jumped out as the pay was significantly better rather than studying.
I think you've raised an important issue, Nicholas, and thanks for doing so. And I might just get a response, actually, from Toby Fattori from the University of Sydney's Workplace Research Centre. Toby, I wonder about the possibility that some young kids could get seduced by the cash in hand that they earn from these part-time jobs and lose sight of the longer-term value of studying hard.
I think it's important to avoid blanket statements about whether working per se is good or bad. I think it's about the nature of the job and the qualities of the job and whether there's adequate supports, whether it's done in balance with the other aspects of a young person's life that they can manage with their other priorities. So, for instance, if you take flexibility as an example, what is important is that flexibility works in favour of the employees as opposed to the employer, so that young people have some control over the amount of time that they work, so that they don't work back late until 10 o'clock at night and fall asleep in class. I think obtaining an income is obviously a very important factor. However, other aspects of working are beneficial. So, for instance, the degree of social recognition which comes with working is also quite significant.
Mm.
And, of course, again, that depends on the nature of the work.
Yeah.
Experiences of support, though, from the employer so that a young person doesn't feel as though they're on their own in terms of how to perform their tasks and aren't given unreasonable supervision, supervisory responsibilities. So
all of those qualifying factors are important to take into account. I want to get a teacher's perspective, though, now, Toby. Sue Simpson is a research officer with the New South Wales Teachers Federation and has been teaching English for 19 years. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Paul.
Now, Sue, you are in support of students working after school, but you do have some concerns. What are they?
Well, we certainly have some concerns, and they've already come through the various callers and speakers on the program tonight. I think one of those concerns comes to just how many hours students are working. Now, whilst Toby cautions against making blanket statements, certainly some research that the Federation had commissioned some 2 years ago suggested quite strongly that the students who work more than 15 hours a week, and for students who particularly want to do well at school, those hours can have a negative impact on their studies.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, late shifts after 9 o'clock at night, and those people who were on call, called in for extra shifts, and weren't in a position to say no to their employer. In other words, those ones who didn't have workplaces where the flexibility worked in the interests of the employee.
Yeah, we had Warren from the Tweed call earlier along. I don't know whether you heard him, so he's a teacher himself.
Yes, I
did. Yeah, probably telling a story that you can relate to of a student who's been working too hard in the back of the class falling asleep. Can you get a sense as a teacher that students have overloaded a bit with their commitments with their work? And how does it, apart from the obvious way of falling asleep in class, how does that tend to manifest itself in those students?
Well, when Warren raised that and then talked about surveying his class, it's precisely what I was doing in the last few years when I was teaching English. You'd see kids with their heads on the desk, late to school, missing lessons, truancy, participating in class to a minimal extent. With assessment tasks, kids would just focus on the assessment tasks. There wouldn't be any wide reading, and as an English teacher, wide reading, if you're wanting to be excelling at your exams, you need to be doing that, you know, or rough copies handed in. Now, I think we do have to be careful that for young people, they can be working long hours, but equally well, they can be tired because they've been sitting up on their social networking site, they've been out socialising, they've been out playing a lot of sport. But certainly when you look at the figures that we managed to get hold of, that 23% of Year 12 students who work more than 15, 16 hours a week, certainly some of those work is some explanation for why some of these kids are tired. And I just know last year a particular kid used to get cheers when he came into my English class first period in the day when he was actually in the class.
Well, 15,
I found out later that he was a manager of a restaurant.
Well, that's ridiculous,
isn't it?
And so he
was working until extremely late at night.
15, 16 hours. There are some restrictions, are there not, on how many hours school students are permitted to work?
I'm not aware that there are any restrictions, and in fact, the Federation first commissioned its research when I, in fact, surveyed my advanced English class and found that about two or three students were working those number of hours, and they were the very students who certainly had the greatest chance of doing the best in their HSE exam, which is the New South Wales final exam.
Yes, I've just heard, in fact, Sue, that this does vary from state to state. I know in Queensland, for example, there are some age-based restrictions on how many hours a student is permitted to work. In fact, if you're, a 14-year-old, for example, and want to do some part-time work, you need permission from your parents or guardian to do so. So I think this stuff does vary. Look, you just mentioned HSC there. Is that a year perhaps when it would be wise for students to maybe put aside the part-time work altogether and focus solely on the studies? I've heard that suggested.
Well, I think there are two ways of looking at that. One, you need to look at the aims of the student. Are they wanting to do very well in the HSE in your traditional academic subjects? And certainly the students that I had in my advanced English class who were working those long hours, cut back those hours. But you also have students here in New South Wales who are doing an HSC where they're focusing very much on vocational subjects, and the very work that they are doing in hospitality, retail, construction, if they are working those hours, can have a direct benefit for the particular subjects that they are studying.
Yes.
So I think, as a previous speaker mentioned, a lot depends on the type of work that the person is doing, but I would also suggest as a teacher, a lot depends on what the student themselves wants from their study. So what I think is interesting now with the big debate that we're having around the My School website and league tables is that there's a great deal of pressure on all schools to ensure that all students are getting the best possible academic results. And I think that's going to mean that for some students, perhaps in some schools, there might be more pressure put on them to increase their academic results, and coming out of that is some pressure to cut back on their work so that the school's reputation is enhanced.
I know at university there is some outside work, usually related to the course that you're studying, that's formally recognised in the curriculum. Is there any argument in favour of that for part-time schoolwork, that we could in some way incorporate recognition of that in students' grades?
Well, that a work experience component, certainly in terms of the New South Wales curriculum, is already incorporated into some courses. However, the research that we did suggested that most students are not working in those sorts of structured settings. But nevertheless, the research that we conducted sort of concurs with all the statements that, you know, parents, teachers, the other people on the panel here tonight are saying, and that is the benefit for young people in mixing in circles outside the school, our research also showed that they often just like to be away from mum.
Mm.
But, you know, the money, the leadership skills, the fact that they can build the very, very strong CV, but importantly, learn how to manage their time. So our research showed, and certainly my experience as a teacher, that the majority of students at school, high school students, are working around about 10 hours a week.
Mm.
That is quite manageable.
Yeah.
And has very, very positive consequences in terms of that time management.
Yeah, I think
you get the stress is with the 15 hours plus a week.
Obviously, that's the crucial thing, how many hours you're working. Sue, I'm going to leave it there, but it's been good to talk to you. Sue Simpson, Research Officer with the New South Wales Teachers Federation. Back with Lucas Walsh and Toby Fattori in just a moment. You're on Australia Talks on ABC Radio National. Maybe you're a teacher as well, with experience of students who've been working after school, maybe working too hard, maybe not. Maybe you're seeing some benefits flowing through in their work because they've become more organised, more mature, more independent. Whatever your perspective, 1300 22 55 76, looking at the clock, this is getting pretty close to your last chance to give us a call with your thoughts. If you're not near the phone or you don't want to call, there is always our message board on the webpage, abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks. We love to read your responses. You can interact with the other people who are responding as well, and it's dead easy to do so. You just click on the topic and register your thoughts. Let's hear from Andy in, is it Werris Creek, Andy?
It's Tamworth now.
No, okay. You're on the road, are you?
I've moved along the road.
All right.
Add my bit to it. I think it's very responsible of young people to actually go and get some work and really take financial responsibility, which is a thing that a lot of us still struggle with into our later years.
Mm.
The thing that it does teach them, I think, more than it's the most important thing it was teaching them, it's the university of life.
Yep.
Because when they leave their nice, cozy environment of mum and dad and school, they walk into this massive, big, wide world where they're not the big fish in the pond anymore.
Mm.
So having some sort of form of work, I just think, teaches them responsibility to try and interact with other people and really sort of get used to those social skills that are integral in our environment nowadays.
Yeah, yeah, it's the world outside of the family and the world outside of the schoolyard. That's right, Andy. Thanks. Maria in Coffs Harbour. Hello, Maria.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Yeah, look, I've been listening to your program most of the hour, mm-hmm. and I'd just like to say it seems like it's a very middle-class thing where, you know, we want our kids to work and mm-hmm. we want them to have the value of work and stuff, but what happens to the children of the underclass? Do they get the same breaks?
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kids are like, you know, oh, I'm going on my overseas trip or I'm buying my new designer goods.
Mm.
What about kids that can't even afford to dress themselves properly for a job interview?
Mm.
When are they going to get a break?
Mm.
And I'm a school teacher as well. And, you know, I'm a sole parent. And my daughter worked all the way through secondary, from 14, 9 months. And
mm.
she put herself through university. But, what about the kids in the underclass and they
yeah.
really get a break?
Yeah, no, I think you've raised a good point, Maria.
Yeah, I think so too. Okay.
Thanks for your call. Toby Fattori, perhaps you could respond to Maria there. I mean, does she have a point in terms of perhaps people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds finding it more difficult, in fact, to get a part-time job when they're at school?
Maria has an absolutely excellent and valid point. We find that young people's access to part-time jobs really tracks a lot by their income. So upper middle class young people are more likely to find work. They're more likely to work in, have the infrastructure to be able to get to jobs. They are more likely to have the contacts to find the work for them in the first place. So here we have a deepening of already existing inequalities. So those young people who are more disadvantaged also miss out on the benefits that those other more privileged young people obtain from working.
Mm. Yep. And by the way, Roz from the Grampians phoned in to say that kids won't understand the value of things that they want unless they actually work and learn what it takes to earn the money to buy them. Thanks, Roz. June in Melbourne's got some concerns, I think, about school students who are working. Hi, June.
Oh, hi. A lot of the points I was going to make have been made, so there's a real difference between work experience and working long hours. But I wanted to take a sort of historical look at this. I mean, what the truth is that young kids at school who work are cheap labour. And the major reason that they're employed is because they cost their employers much less than if they were employing even university students or anyone older. So we're only looking at it from the point of view at the moment of, you know, what benefits, if any, it is for the young. But in fact, you know, there is a reason why most states have labour laws, and they are in order to stop, among other things, the exploitation of the young.
I was going to raise that very point myself, June.
And so it does really... We've got an interesting history in Australia. I remember a wonderful story from Tasmania, and some of the Tasmanian listeners may know this. During the Second World War, schools used to stop, actually close, during the hop-picking season so that children could go to work. And it took until 1947 before you could send your child to school at certain times of the year.
So the kids were missing school so that beer could be produced.
Well, exactly. And one of the owners, one of the big owners, wrote a wonderful letter to the Mercury saying that he worried about the war effort if the hops should decline.
Look, one wonders too whether or not some of the large fast food multinationals would grind to a halt if not for school student labour. Thanks, June. In fact, I might come to you, Lucas Walsh, on the broader point of how much these school kids who are working part-time know about their industrial rights and obligations at work and what their pay and conditions entitlements are.
Yeah, one of the major concerns coming out in recent years is the extent to which young people understand what their rights are, as you point out, Paul, and what the conditions are of work. And what we do know is that we could really raise those levels of understanding, particularly in those areas which are most prominent, things like fast food and hospitality, and in other areas where young people might be exposed to risks. We've already highlighted some of those risks, such as working late, but also other risks in the workplace.
The industrial risks of working in potentially dangerous environments.
Absolutely.
Mm. Yep. Thanks for that. Like, I mean, even working at the back cooking pizzas, I could imagine all manner of potential problems. And actually, just on that, Lucas, do we know how well those kids are being trained in those workplaces?
Well, the levels of training vary tremendously. That's what we do know, that the level of quality of training in the workplace, and this includes both formal forms of training and also the types of informal training, is quite inconsistent.
Yeah.
So it varies a lot.
I think Dale and Mackay wanted to raise the prospect that young people are vulnerable to injury. Is that right, Dale?
Yes, good day. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I'm with the Australian Safe Community Foundation, and one of the issues that we have concern about is that young workers are much more vulnerable to getting injured. So a few studies that have been done, including one in Mackay, would suggest that per hour worked, a high school-aged worker is about twice as likely to sustain an injury while at work. So that highlights the importance of good training that you were just talking about.
Thanks, Dale. Tony in Brisbane. Hello, Tony.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I just wanted to give a story from when I was at high school. We moved to Dooloolu and went to Mount Morgan High, and then in the same year my father got a job in Denmark and we had to move again. So they had sold up everything and moved to Rocky, and we were taking a bus to Mount Morgan every morning and arriving about 6:30 in the morning. Now, we'd worked since we were very young, since probably we were 12 or 13, you know, on farms and around the community and the other in Wamuran where we lived. So my brother and I decided to get a job in the morning at the local service station cleaning up, and we spent that money in the afternoon after school while we were waiting for the bus playing pool. But the other thing was that I actually, because of my work ethic, ended up putting myself through university by working.
Good. Thanks, Tony. And not many people doing that these days, I don't think. Maybe you'd like to actually send in your thoughts on that, about whether or not that ethic still exists amongst young people, and you know, whether or not there are still, you know, teenagers putting themselves through university, for example, as a result of the part-time work they've begun at high school. That's at abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks, where you can post your thoughts. Toby Fattori, just want to pick up on another one of the recommendations from that government report that I cited earlier, the establishment of a code of practice for employers to counteract students being exploited. Do you think that would help and is necessary?
I think a code of practice is a possibly a sensible idea, an additional resource. However, I think we also need to rely on employment laws to really provide rights for employees generally, and also in particular young people who are employed. So I think a code of practice sends a very clear message to employers about what appropriate and suitable behaviour is. But I think it really needs to be backed by something which has greater force. And I think the current changes at the national level in terms of federal industrial relations laws, we are moving in a direction which is setting a minimum floor
Of course, none of those rules, regulations or codes really are all that helpful to those students who are in the informal workforce, are they?
That's right. And so for those young people, they're relying upon the sorts of social supports which they generate through working for someone that they know. And that can be very, very mixed. That can be quite dangerous or it can be quite supportive, depending on the nature of the circumstances. But that's right. Those young people fall entirely outside of those formal systems.
Lucas Walsh, any thoughts on saving versus spending when it comes to the money that some students are earning? Should parents be looking at setting some limits on how much of their children's earnings are spent versus saved?
I think, you know, look, in part it's a question of common sense that, you know, a lot of the calls tonight have talked about the value of responsibility and of setting standards and setting boundaries for responsibility. And I think that's generally a good thing where you can do it. As for what is spent and what is saved, I mean, I think Toby made the point earlier that the income that tends to be earned by teenagers does not fall under what's called core income. It's actually additional benefit income to that young people and to those young people and in some circumstances their parents. So, you know, it really varies from individual, I think.
Yep. Perhaps they could save some of it for that expensive school trip that seems to be becoming more and more common. Look, thanks to Dr. Lucas Walsh, Director of Research with the Foundation for Young Australians, and Toby Fattori, Senior Research Analyst at the University of Sydney's Workplace Research Centre. Let's finish up with some calls. James in Brisbane. Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. I just question the whole premise of why some people think it's necessary for high school students to work. A generation or so ago, most teenagers didn't work or they worked very little before they left high school. You know, they managed to get by largely on the money that was provided by their parents and just got on with being children, teenagers and students. And yet today it's sort of presumed that to get on life we have to gain all these vital networking skills and time management skills and all these other skills to have a competitive advantage once we get out of school or into the workforce or into university. And I suggest that that's not the society that we should really want to be. We should be a society where young people should be able to be a little bit more relaxed. If they want a bit more money, you know, maybe work a few hours a week but not have to work like slaves till, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Keep the young kids young and away from it all. Thanks, while they're at school anyway. Thanks, James. Brett in Melbourne, I think, will be our last caller. Hi, Brett. Hi there.
Yep. I just wanted to say thank the employers. I've got a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old, and for them to be able to get jobs, one with Coles and one with the local bakery, is just fantastic.
And you've seen some benefits flow through with your kids?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, they have to manage their own phone plans and everything, and it gives them the money to do that. Yes, and just to have employers in the community that continually take kids on and cycle them through and bring them through all of that is just fantastic for them to get their $7 or $10 an hour.
Thanks, Brett in Melbourne. Want to keep the discussion going on this. I'm sure there are many thoughts, a diverse range of opinions on whether it's a good, bad or problematic thing, more and more school students working part-time. abc.net.au/rn/AustraliaTalks. Write in with your thoughts. Maybe get your children to write in and post their thoughts as well. They're always in front of the computer, social networking. Get them to log on to our website and tell us why they're working and what they're getting out of it. That's it for Australia Talks today. You can download this program for another 2 weeks tomorrow on the program. It's chronic pain. 1 in 5 of you lives with persistent pain. 80% aren't getting the right kind of treatment. What can be done about it? That's on Australia Talks tomorrow. Hope you can join us then.
We all know the song, but did the swagman really drown? Or was he assassinated to silence a rebellion? How did this ditty about a mysterious death by a billabong become such a valuable piece of our cultural real estate? Come a waltzing with Radio National and dig deep into the real story behind Australia's unofficial anthem. For podcasts, online extras and videos, look for the Matilda Myth on the Radio National homepage.